Brandon Cutler here from AEW, and I hope you guys have an awesome podcast with the Monster Cast.
What's up, you guys? Sean Rossap, Fightful here. You're watching the Monster Cast with Jack and Ryan. A big shout out to those fellas. Good people. Check them out.
Here's your hosts of the Monster Cast, the Straight Edge Monster Jack and Ryan.
But yeah, let's get to it. All right, so Battle in the Valley review. Of course, let's throw up the prediction records again. 16-2, 14-4. So we did pretty good on this one as well, obviously. I'm going to skip the 8-man tag. You did get that one right, though. I will give you credit for that, obviously. But let's talk about more about
the story.
Yeah, let's talk about more of the other stuff. Well, the thing about that one is it didn't really involve the two guys that the story was involved with either until after the match was over. So that was weird. But anyway. Yeah. All right, let's get into Kenta defeating Fred Rosser by pinfall for the Strong Openweight Championship. We both got this one right. Solid match. I was actually pretty impressed. Obviously, we said that Rosser's gotten a lot better under the New Japan Strong umbrella, but we still both picked Kenta, obviously, because, like, why wouldn't you have Kenta be your champion? He's the first Japanese wrestler and only the third champion in its history, in its short history. First Japanese champion to win. Or Japanese person to win the championship, I should say. 16 minutes and 31 second match. It was pretty good, though. Really like that he really played to the fact that the rumor of CM Punk being there to watch a show and then, you know, went to do the go-to-sleep thing and then flipped everybody off and did the OG GTS instead with the cutting of the throat type deal. What did you think of this match overall, though?
Yeah, I thought it was pretty good. I think we talked last week saying that, you know, Rosser really has come up. You know what my favorite... the match itself was fine, but one of my favorite spots was when Rosser is pulling on Kenta's hair. So Kenta pretends like he's pulling on Rosser's hair, but Rosser's bald. So he just keeps, like, pawing at the top of his fucking head while he's got him in a side headlock. That was funny to me. But, no, it was really good. I don't think it needed the juice part. How'd you feel about that?
In hindsight, yes, I agree. At the time, I didn't have an issue with it, honestly. Because... part of you wants to protect Rosser a little bit because he's your main champion on Strong and he's losing the title, right? So I didn't have a problem with it. I had a problem with it later because Juice didn't come back out later, which we'll talk about, obviously.
Juice isn't the guy.
Yeah, I understand.
You know why? Because he's an AEW. He's an AEW guy.
No. I don't have a problem with him not being the person to do what Finley did. I have a problem with them both not taking him out like they've been doing with everybody else. Like we had mentioned last week, you mentioned it about how everybody gets put out or put somebody else over on the way out and they get kicked out of the Bullet Club. This time it was just a one-on-one thing and it was weird, especially when you already know that Juice was there. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So we both agreed with that one. Motor City Machine Guns kept their tag team titles against the West Coast Wrecking Crew. Now, I don't have a problem with the match being a little bit under 10 minutes. It was 9:21. It was what it was. We thought Motor City Machine Guns was going to win. They're also Impact champions as well, and one of the best tag teams of all time. My main concern about this, my main gripe about this match, is the West Coast Wrecking Crew's gear. I hated it so much. It goes with nothing else that you got going on with your tag team. It doesn't even go with anything else that you had on at the time. Your two jackets didn't match. They didn't match the rest of the gear. One dude had the purple fucking frilly shit on and then white knee pads and silver boots. And then the other dude looked like he was fucking cosplaying fucking Ezekiel. So, like, I didn't know what the fuck was going on with that. Like, none of that made any sense. I just did not visually like that tag team. I don't have a problem with them two being together. As a tag team, I'm just going to say that. But when you outline this match was when you outline West Coast Wrecking Crew and then you come out looking like that, like what? That didn't go together whatsoever. It was terrible. Didn't like
it. That's just how they do it on the West Coast, bro.
I hated it. Hated it.
Mm. Yeah, I didn't get it either. It was very visually jarring. Even without the color mismatches, just that weird like kilt skirt thing over the trunk, like,
and then they had like the leopard print tights underneath it. It was terrible. What were you going for? Just tell me what you were going for, so to help me understand. Because whatever it was you were going for, it didn't work. I promise you. Because you can't go for it was like a DDP fucking gimmick thing going out there. You had five different things going on, and none of it was working.
The worst part of this match was the pageantry. But
it took away from the match because that's all I could fucking focus on. It was so bad.
Okay. If we're going to make that argument, then every match Rhea Ripley is in takes me out of the match too because it's all I could fucking focus on.
But that's for good reasons, not bad reasons.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, the match was fine. You're right. The gear was kind of... It wasn't so distracting that it took me out of the match, but it was definitely like...
Velly's in the chat. Velly, did it take us out of the match? We talked about that almost the entire match. We were like, just like, what the fuck are they wearing, trying to figure it out?
It was the Val Venus / Headbangers combo. I didn't know what was going on either, but it wasn't super distracting me. And the match was over pretty quick, so it didn't bother me.
He came out in a red and white jacket, the purple frilly fucking Conan shit, white knee pads, and silver boots. That was just the one guy. The other guy, Royce Isaacs, he came out in a black leather jacket, the purple frilly Conan thing with the leopard print on underneath. And then the fucking, the berserker fucking, frilly fucking Ezekiel fuzzy shit going on with the tassels and shit all the way down. Like, it was just weird, dude.
That's how they dress on the West Coast wrestling.
It's not.
It's a West Coast thing. You wouldn't understand.
It was terrible.
We've been the East Coast our whole lives.
It was terrible.
I didn't like it.
Well, guess what? They were in San Jose, and everybody else that was there didn't wear anything like that.
So they're not from there.
I was looking out in the crowd. They're all San Jose people. That's in California, if I'm not mistaken.
They're not in the Wrecking Crew.
That's West Coast. That's West Coast as you
not,
can get.
They're not in the Wrecking Crew. This is specific to the
There's
Wrecking
no Wrecking Crew that looks like it. If they would have, I said this during the show too. I was like, dude, if they would have came out there and like really put over like just a bunch of random different shit where it could work, where it looked like they came out in a fucking, they're like came out of a comic book type deal, and they were like the henchmen type deal, where there was just a bunch of neon shit, and you're supposed to look like, what were they wrecking dressed like that? Yeah, what were they wrecking? Because they lost in under 10 minutes. They didn't wreck anything. They wrecked fashion. So bad. That's what they wrecked, Valley. What were they wrecking just like that? I agree. But anyway, that's taken away from the match. The match was fine. It's what we thought it was going to be. Let's move on, though.
Well, hold on. But who's the name of that? You would know this. I always forget his name. I think it's the Spider-Man universe. There's like a character who's like a hunter, and he always wears different
Kraven?
Furs. Kraven. Yeah.
Yeah, but that's maybe not what they were going for.
They were going for Kraven.
No, they weren't.
So West Coast Kraven.
It's fucking so bad. That's about as bad as fucking them calling Liv Morgan Spider-Man or whatever when she wasn't even wearing Spider-Man colors. That shit was stupid as fuck.
Jean shorts that are fucking,
Don't get me started, dude. Alright, so anyway. Next up was a really good match. It was Eddie Kingston versus Jay White. 19 minutes in the Loser Leave New Japan match. If Kingston lost, he would have had to get White's permission to continue to compete in New Japan, which I thought would have been a hilarious storyline, honestly. Does this all but pretty much tell you that Jay White's going to WWE instead of AEW? And what did you think of the match and the fucking chop fest that ensued?
There was a lot of chops in this match. If the outfits were distracting in the last match, the spit was distracting in this match. Those motherfuckers were spitting everywhere, spit all over their mouths, spits down their chin. That was a lot of spit. And then he eventually spits the long spit onto Eddie Kingston's fucking stomach. There's so much spit. There's a lot of spit in this match. The match itself was good. Very heavy chops. I think I even texted you in the middle of it. I was like, Jay White's chest is going to be fucking raw tomorrow.
But here's the thing about that, though. After you texted me that, because I wasn't watching it yet, because I was watching press conference still. Mm. Here's the funny thing about that, is that when I'm watching that match, and he does like the first 30 chops, I'm like, Jay White's chest looks pretty normal. I mean, it's a little red, but it was fine. But he did it like 80 more fucking times, and then it started looking like fucking Bryan Danielson or Sheamus's chest.
The weird thing is, because he's like more tan, it doesn't show up as like a bright red over a white. It looks like a deep fucking purple. And when you start seeing it like that, it's just like, dude, that's going to be so bruised.
Like I was trying to explain to 8-Bit Hobo Farmer and Belly at the show when we were watching, I was like, you know what? When he's slapping him constantly like that, and not even just the rapid fire ones, but just when he's in the rhythm and doing it, right? That probably hurts less than when he stops doing it, does two other moves, and then goes back to it, because that probably hurts worse, because now you've let the pain get there, and then you hit it again. Ooh, that's gotta fucking suck, dude. Like, when you're in the middle of it, and you're feeling it, and it's going numb, and you don't feel it no more, but then the time in between, and he starts doing that shit again? Oh, no, 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 sir. No, no. But that match was fucking crazy.
Like getting spanked when you're a kid, or when you're an adult, if you're into that. But it's like, when it's happening, as long as they don't stop for a little bit, it's not as bad as if they stop and then start again. Same thing again.
What do we think Jay White does here? What do we think Eddie Kingston does here?
I thought it was nice of Kingston to leave the ring and try to give him his moment. I don't know if he knew that the stupid fucking angle with the David Finlay stuff was happening right after, but I do wish that Jay had gotten a chance to talk. I understand. I mean, they could have done the David Finlay stuff right after. It would have been fine. I wanted to hear what he had to say. I don't know. I think
if he would have said something, he would have kind of tipped off where he was going, though. So this is probably best.
Right. And I think that when we talked about Jay White last week, I think I said even it would make sense for him to go to WWE at his age, at this point in his career. But he's got so many friends in AEW, and he's had to have heard from these same friends, like, over there it's kind of shit, and over here it's kind of chill. Like, you would have a much lighter date. Like, we've worked there, we've worked here, and here's better. They're going to fuck you up over there. They're going to make you do all kinds of shit. You're going to be, you know, James Blanco when you come out, and you're not going to be able to do your gimmick and all this other stuff.
Oh, we were coming up with names for him in WWE, too, at the show. Like,
James Blanco is my favorite.
I came up with literally your name is just going to be a J, but it's going to always be in white bold font, and we're just going to call you J, and you're just supposed to assume that it's J White. J Blade, we came up with J Blade, like Beyblade. We were coming up with some dumb shit at the party yesterday. So yeah.
Well, he might not be able to be J because there's already a J Uso.
I also said that.
Yeah. You know how they are.
That's why I said J-Blade. It's one word. J-Blade.
Yeah. They won't. They're not going to let him keep the Switchblade nickname because it's not PG. What's a Switchblade? It's a knife. An illegal knife. So, yeah. I don't know, man. I could see him going to WWE just from his age and just from, like I was talking about. Like, some people, they see that company and the things that you can do there as, like, things that they've looked at doing since they were kids. And they're really excited about, you know, being Intercontinental Champion or winning a Royal Rumble or being on WrestleMania or whatever the fuck. And maybe he's got that mentality. I don't know. He's pretty private. Like, it's not like he talks a lot in interviews about, like, how he got into wrestling or, like, what he wanted to do when he was growing up or any of that shit. He's so in character all the time in a lot of his interviews. I think, like I said, the only interview I've ever seen where he wasn't 100% in character was with Renee. And even during that, he was, like, pretty private about stuff. He mentioned, you know, living in Florida with his wife now and all that, but, like, nothing super, super personal, nothing about, like, you know, oh, my dad was super into it when I was a kid, and that's how I got into it, and we used to watch Royal Rumble, like, none of that shit. So, it's hard to say. I don't know what his motivations are, aside from living in the U.S., which I think is a big one for him, and he could do that for you.
He'd be in my top five list of wrestlers that I would like to have a sit-down, like, dinner with or conversation with or something like that, if they're actually going to answer questions and actually talk. Like, yeah. I got that strong vibe from Moxley too when he was in WWE and at the beginning of the AEW before he started going on and actually, you know, disclosing things and stuff like that and opening up more. There's certain guys that you just have a feeling they're deep down they're good dudes, but they're very private and you wish you understood their mindset a little bit more, not just like towards the business, but just in life type deal. And Jay White comes off like that to me.
You know who else is like that? It's Pac. Pac's like that a lot too. Because even when he was a good guy and when he turned heel and all that stuff, you never really get a lot of, like, out of character stuff with Pac, except for the video game shit he was doing on Up, Up, Down, Down. then you can see him being a little bit more like how he normally is. And you can tell he's like super fucking nice guy. But when he comes out as Pac or when he's doing interviews or any of that shit, it's all a bastard. So like you don't get a lot of the backstage stuff. So, but the other thing too is you hear from backstage people, they're like, oh, you know, one of the people that really helps me put together my stuff and I can go to for stuff is Pac. Like he's really good about stuff like that. So yeah, I think Jay White comes off as one of those people too.
All right, so the next 30 minutes, you gotta have to take the reins on this, just so you know. So, not 30 minutes of the show, but 30 minutes of Battle in the Valley. Because during the Tom Lawlor homicide, Filthy Rules fight, that's when I dozed off and fell asleep because it was not good from the part that I saw. And then when I woke up, it was already starting with the Mercedes Moné Kyrie match. I had missed the entrances, so I got to go back and watch that because Belly and Michael told me, an 8-bit Hobo Farmer told me that what she was wearing and talk about some shit that didn't make any sense. So I got to go back and try to watch that.
It doesn't make sense to them because they don't know who Hanakamura is.
Oh, that's what she was doing? See, yes. They didn't explain it like that. They said cone boobs and a gas mask, and I wasn't really putting it together. So
the
it was Hanakamura?
Hanakamura, yeah.
Oh, that's badass. Okay,
same,
so I definitely got to go watch
boots.
That then.
Yeah,
okay, so that makes a lot more sense. So that's cool then. So I definitely got to go just watch that then. Also, shout out to Mercedes Moné's YouTube, where she posted the Wrestle Kingdom 17 stuff. I don't know if you watched that video. I'm sure you've seen clips of it, obviously, where her meeting Kenny Omega and the crying part and all that shit. But it's like a 20-minute video. Dude, there's no way you can watch that video and not come out liking Sasha Banks more than you did when you went into it, for sure. Like, it was just really fucking well done. Talking about people that you don't see open up a lot and are always in character, but then they opened up right there, like... People should really go out of their way to watch that video. I thought it was really good and really well done. A little of a vlog style type deal. Really fucking good. Okay, so Tom Lawlor and Homicide and Zack Sabre Jr. versus Clark Connors. Tell me what you thought about that, because I got to go. I'm definitely going to go back and watch Zack Sabre Jr. and Clark Connors. I'm not going to go back and watch Tom Lawlor versus Homicide because I did not like what I had saw up to that point before I dozed off.
It wasn't good. The Tom Lawlor match... The only redeeming parts of it were there's a door spot where he puts Homicide through the door. Like Homicide pulls the door out from underneath the ring and puts it up on the barricade, and they end up doing a spot through that. And there was one part where he fish hooks him with the hook for the turnbuckle. That was innovative, I guess, since you can't really do that in matches with ropes. One funny thing was Homicide seemed to have a problem adjusting to the fact that there were no ropes. So he grabs a chair out from underneath the ring, and instead of
and
just throwing
it over,
the ring,
I saw that part.
He tosses
I saw that
it
part.
Over like there's still ropes there.
Yeah,
like,
I said something
doing?
About it. I was like, he still tossed it way up in the sky like it was ropes. Yeah, it was funny as hell.
That was stupid. That was so stupid. But yeah, overall, it was pretty much just it was a garbage little, you know, here's a bunch of weapons. Here's some aluminum tins that everybody that's looking at knows don't hurt at all. If you're to get hit with them, we all make fucking crumb cake in these, okay? We've all felt them. We all know they've been like this. I don't like those spots. Super boring.
I'm almost positive they're just there for the visual aspect because it gets really crumpled, and obviously the sound aspect because it sounds like you just got fucked up.
Yeah, but it doesn't. Everybody looking at them knows what they are. It's not like a trash can lid that's basically made out of the same shit because everybody has an idea of what a trash can lid is where it's like it can be harder. There are hard trash can lids. But there are no hard versions of the fucking aluminum pants. So it just doesn't make any sense. It's like hitting somebody with a fucking wiffle bat. Actually, that would probably hurt more. So, didn't like that. Then the chairs, they did a couple spots with chairs where they would like throw the chair at the person's face. They did that like 3 times. It started to lose some of its effect. Tom Lawlor ended up winning, which makes sense because it's his match, obviously. Just nothing to really write home about. At the end of it, he took off his short shorts to reveal even shorter denim shorts, if that means anything to you. And then that match.
That's what the West Coast Wrecking Crew should be wearing. Are those?
There you go. get Tom Lawlor to your wardrobe. And then the Clark Connors Zack Sabre Jr. match. That was actually a really good match. Connors seemed to have a hard time getting the crowd behind him very much at first, but as the match played out, it was going toward the. They were playing toward the drama of it having a 15-minute time limit, essentially. And, like, if he can make it to the end, then, you know, he might get a rematch or whatever, but Sabre doesn't technically win. So the 15-minute time limit actually did come into play pretty heavy in it, which is why when he wins, there was less than a minute left when he won. But it was a pretty typical Zack Sabre Jr. match, a lot of submission type stuff. He ended up winning with a submission. Connors looked good for a couple spots, but nothing crazy. I mean, you can go back and watch it. It's not like a bad match or anything by any means. But I don't think anybody went into this thinking that Connors was going to win, so it kind of suffered from that too. The only interesting story to tell was the one that they ended up telling, which is what if he makes it the whole 15 minutes and Zach can't put him away? And they did tell that story. Zach does end up putting him away, so it kind of closes the book on that. It was fine for what it was and for the people that were in it. And Zack Sabre Jr., again, you know, gets another win in his defenses, which is great.
All right, let's talk about the longest match on the card. It was a 26-minute and 47-second match for a match that some people didn't think was going to get any time. Also, we were skeptical. I'm not going to sit here and act like I knew it was going to get a shit ton of time, especially not over 20 minutes. But we did say on the show that if it didn't get a bunch of time, that we weren't going to have a lot of faith going into the New Japan Women's Division going forward. Right. So we made excuses for the Wrestle Kingdom 17 bit because that was when she debuted, Mercedes. So she had the whole long ramp and the fucking song and the promo package at the beginning and the shit afterwards. So we thought that all played into a part why they reduced the time of the actual match between Kairi and Nakano. Well, even though it was in New Japan strong style or strong match or pay-per-view or whatever, this is very promising for the division going forward with a 26-minute, 47-second match that went longer than Okada Tanahashi. And Mercedes Moné defeats Kairi by pinfall with her new move to win the New Japan... it is New Japan, but the IWGP Women's Championship. I thought the match was really fucking good, honestly. Better than any of their matchups that they had in WWE. As far as, definitely for Kairi's side, anyway. Kairi never had a really good fucking singles match like that, I don't think. Not from everything I looked at. Sasha had some really good matches. Obviously, she had the two takeover matches with Bayley, which were fucking amazing. But just with how much time she's been off, and then doing this and being super fucking nervous and all this stuff and in a big stage like that, becoming the second ever IWGP Women's Champion, a division that she's trying to build from the ground up with Kairi and make it a relevant thing, and finding out that this was her dream all along and this is what she always was alluding to vaguely on social media, that what I want doesn't exist yet. It was this is what she was talking about. And even like a year ago, I was talking to you at the last Wrestle Kingdom, hey, how long before we get the women in New Japan? And you were skeptical at first, and then, of course, they made the deal to really integrate the Stardom thing not too long ago, and then they had the historic crossover pay-per-view, and then they introduced that they were going to have the IWGP Championship for the women and all this stuff, and it just really snowballed really fast. And I feel like Mercedes and Kairi are huge parts of that, obviously. Where they build the division up from here remains to be seen. I'm sure that they'll go against each other again. Kairi will probably have a rematch, obviously, because there's really nobody else in the division yet to go against Mercedes before she starts going on her journey to see how long she can hold this title. But overall, I thought the match was fantastic, dude. Like, way better than I was going in expecting, just not only from a time standpoint of hey, how much time they got, but how good it was, how competitive it was, how much I was into it by the end of it. Like, I mean, it wasn't like I was rooting for one or the other. Obviously, I was going for Mercedes because of the predictions. And it really wouldn't have made sense for Mercedes to go all the way over to Japan at Wrestle Kingdom to debut and then her first match lose, right? So, like, I was hoping she was going to win. But yeah, for that to be her first match, a 26-minute, 47-second match.
And I think a big thing, too, is that it was cool that they presented it as a co-main event. Like, it wasn't like, oh, here's the women's match before the big match. The announcers kept saying it's a co-main event, co-main event, co-main event. They had them do, like, really, like, detailed, like, entrances, stuff like that. So it wasn't just like, it's a match on the card. It was presented like it was a big deal, which I think is what a lot of people were worried about not happening. So them actually doing that, it probably put a lot of people at ease about how New Japan actually views that women's division they're trying to build.
So I will say that I'm still a little skeptical because I want to see it on an actual New Japan real show in Japan. Well, I want to see that. I want to see something close to that. Then I'll be like, okay, this is going to be fucking awesome, and they're going to have probably the best women's division in the fucking world. Obviously, you still have AEW. I think AEW is doing really good right now. I think they're outside that the storyline attached to it. I do love their talent that are involved in that outsider or the freelancers storyline that they got going on. Now, it's taken a little while for that shit to gain the traction and the footing that they want it to have. But the people involved in that, all fucking superior talented, like super talented fucking ladies. So I'm excited for that. And of course, you still got the Jade Cargill stuff as well for whoever comes back. We all still think it's Statlander that comes back and potentially takes it off of her. Impact obviously still has a solid women's roster, and WWE has a really good roster. They just don't use them like they're a good roster. So New Japan could easily catapult to be number one if they get some depth in the roster. The depth is the issue with the depth and the for New Japan, if they're using from Stardom, it's not only the depth, because I feel like they got the depth. It's just, are they going to use that depth on their shows, or is it always going to be just, hey, it's the championship match and that's it? That's the big
thing. Yeah, that's true. They don't have any undercard women's, and it doesn't seem like they're ever building toward those. You know what? There's two things I didn't like about this match. One, I guess it ends up just being all the same thing. You have Mercedes come out at the end of that other pay-per-view to do the challenge to Kairi. And she doesn't come out and say, hey, like, I want to challenge you for the belt. She doesn't come out and say, like, oh, this has been my dream forever, any of that shit. She comes out and just attacks her. Like, literally just hits her with a special move after, you know, whatever. In this match, she's wrestling a heel the whole time. There's one point where Kairi's probably about to beat her with the crossface, and Mercedes bites her hand. Like, she's working heel the whole time. At the end of the match, Kairi and her are like all buddy-buddy and like, oh yeah, I'm going to raise your hand. Like, oh look, you won, you deserved it, whatever. You can't work heel and then do that at the end. That doesn't make any sense to me. I don't like that.
It was crazy because it's almost like the vibe I got was, okay, so she's definitely supposed to be heel, right? Obviously, right. Because she attacked Kairi at the end of her match at Wrestle Kingdom 17. But then she's also still caught up in the fucking emotions of being in fucking New Japan and doing all this stuff and fighting for the IWGP. It's almost like she let the, and this is all New Japan too, because they're the ones that told her to come out with Okada later, which also makes her look like a face. It like seeps in from that fucking vlog video that I'm telling you about.
Right.
Like she's like half that and then half this character. And I know she wants to be the character, obviously. But she's also trying to establish at the same time how much she wants to be there and stuff. And it's like, you can't do both at the same time. So you can have your vlog stuff and everybody can be like, oh, super happy for you because we now know that this is legit something that you've always wanted. It's not some bullshit thing just to say that you did it before the rest of the Four Horsewomen did it. This is something you really wanted to fucking do. And then mix that in with your CEO persona of making money and doing whatever it takes to have to win whatever and be in the new face of the division. So you got to pick a side here. And the other thing is the fans were going to cheer Mercedes at this event anyway, because it's the first time we've seen her wrestle in forever. So that didn't help either. You should have just played it straight up.
Well, tickets to it sold out just on the announcement of this match. Yeah. So obviously there's going to be like a heavy contingent of Sasha fans. That, I mean, it's not like Kyrie's not a draw, but it's obvious who the draw was there. You just can't have this dichotomy of character where you're like, oh, like I'm so happy to be here, and I'm like crying, and like, you know, that's great. I'm super happy for it. But to have that and then try to do heel shit in the match, and then at the end of the match go back to, oh, we're buddy buddy and I'm so proud of you and whatever, it just doesn't fucking work.
Yeah, I get that. I understand that nitpick for sure. If you had to get a star rating, if you had to put your Meltzer hat on, what would you give this?
I'm like a 4.5. I think it was a really solid match. It wasn't anything that I would say is like the best women's match of all time, like some people are saying for some fucking reason.
No, I wouldn't say that either. I wouldn't say that either. I think it's the best Kairi American match of all time.
Yeah, I could agree with that. I also, there were a lot of good, like, She did the belly-to-belly suplex. They got a bunch of fucking Bailey chants in the middle of the match.
Yeah, they were in San Jose, cool. Of course, and then she did her best friend's fucking move. Yeah, it was awesome.
Yeah, Bailey was there. There's pictures of her at the event. She's in the crowd, up against the wall, watching.
Yeah, so, yeah. We were curious if she had to be at Elimination Chamber, even though she wasn't scheduled. So we were wondering that. I didn't actually see her with my own two eyes or anything. I didn't see CM Punk either, obviously. But yeah, we heard that they were both there or whatever. So that's cool that she was actually able to attend because it is her home area or whatever. The other thing is, no, I don't agree that it's Sasha's best match of all time or the greatest women's match of all time. That's obviously Sasha Stan accounts on social media that were bitching about them getting time and that they were going to turn it off after the match anyway. So I'm really not putting too much stock in what they say. Because nobody, I don't give a fuck if it was Rollins versus Roman Reigns. They're not going on a New Japan Strong match after fucking Okada Tanahashi. I don't give a fuck, right? So, I mean, that's out of sight, out of mind, out of the realm of possibility. But anyway, that aside, I don't know if it was necessarily Sasha's best match. I still think that Sasha and Bailey at TakeOver was fucking... I think their first one is actually better than their second one. But the one that was... They were both takeovers, but the one that was at Full Sail when Sasha made Izzy cry, I thought that match was actually better than the New York one. A lot of people think the New York one is the best one, but when Bailey finally wins it. But I'll say it's close, though. I tend to agree with you on this one. I'm going to go... I think I'd go 4.5, too. It was fucking good. Like, I was not expecting it to be that good. So, like, if we're going to get 4.5s, on a reg, then dude, like, it's gonna be
that division has nothing to worry about.
Sure. Nobody has anything to worry about over there. Like, everybody should just wake up this morning and be like, okay, let's fucking build off of this. Like, this is great, but we don't want this to be the best ever either. We don't want it to all be downhill from here. Like, let's build on 4.5. let's not, hey, we got 4.5, now we can have 3-3-3-3-3-3-3-3-3-3 one match on every show type deal. No, let's build on it, not fucking be stagnant. Because that's the same thing I want AEW to do right now, because Jamie Hayter's run has been fucking banger after banger after banger after banger, 4.5s, 4.5s with Sheeta and fucking, oh my god, I just forgot. Sheeta, Tony Storm, obviously. So, like, I want to see that continue for them as well. So, like, this is something that these two companies should build on, not be like, okay, that was our ceiling.
Yeah. And for anybody that's like, you know, that's going to complain about the it's not the best women's match of all time thing, there's a match that y'all should watch. It's like a year and a half ago. It was a Stardom match. It was for the Stardom Championship, World Stardom Championship thing, the red belt, whatever that one is. I think it's World Stardom. But it was Utami versus Sayuri. And that match goes to a 30-minute time limit draw. And then after the draw, the whoever it was that didn't have the belt, I want to say it was Sayuri didn't have the belt, she asked for more time. So they give him another 15 minutes. And then that match ends in a fucking double knockout. That was the craziest women's match I think I've ever seen. It's probably the best women's match I've ever seen. Sorry to spoil the ending for you. But if you go and watch that match, you'll understand why you might be in this WWE bubble where that match was like really fucking good for you. And it was a really good match. Don't get me wrong. The Kyrie Mercedes match was really good. But to call something the best women's match of all time, there is a bar that you have to hit that you're not aware of because you don't keep up with Joshi stuff. And I'm not even going to say that I keep up with Joshi stuff to like the extent of like a Church of Joshi or people like that are super, super into it. But when I hear about a really good match, I'll go and watch it. That match still sticks with me because of the way that it all played out was really good. So it's not like an anti-Mercedes thing. Everybody, 4.5 is not a bad rating. It just wasn't the best women's match of all time. So
yeah, that's the thing. Let's not do the recency bias. You say this, like, if you try to reel people in with stuff that they haven't watched, then they just take that as you being anti-whatever. Now, sure. I'm on record to say that I am a Sasha Banks fan. Ryan says he hasn't really cared for her one way or the other, but he doesn't dislike her. He thinks that she's very talented. So... like, it's not like we're sitting on here being like, no, Sasha is not good, or Sasha's the worst out of the four horsewomen. Nobody's saying that. But that's how they fucking just... if you say anything critical about somebody's favorite, that's how they take it, and it's fucking super annoying. And then it makes you want to say shit, right? Then
and
it makes
I think a lot of my shit. Issue with her actually is the thing that I just pointed out, and maybe I haven't been able to put my finger on it to that extent in the past, but it is that straddling the line of, like, you can tell that she is a heel character. If that makes sense. Like, there's no... There's not enough of a blur in the reality of who she is as a person versus character.
Well, here's the thing. Like, if you watch Wrestle Kingdom 17, it's 100% heel.
Yeah.
You can't come out and attack the fucking person that just won the goddamn title match after shaking their hands and be like, oh, no, she's not a heel. What the f- yeah. Yeah, she is. She's a heel.
Yeah.
She's literally a heel. But yeah, what I want for the women's divisions across all companies is when we look at a match like that, I want to be able to say that was a 3-star match, not a 4.5 right. match. That's what I'm hoping in the future. I want that to be the norm. I want that to be fucking awesome all the time, especially in big title match situations. Not every match, obviously, can be like that, but you get what I'm saying. Let's move on to the main event. Obviously, Okada defending the IWGP World Heavyweight Championship and defeating Hiroshi Tanahashi by pinfall in 21 minutes and 8 seconds. The second longest match on the card. And I was actually shocked because he beat him with one Rainmaker.
Yeah. So I think the story of the match was more that he did so many things to counter the Rainmaker throughout the match. Like, there were a few times throughout the match where he was able to get out of it or whatever. So the one that finally hit him is the one that put him away. I think that makes sense. Like when he did the Sling Blade counter and stuff like that. So I'm kind of fine with that ending. I think that the Rainmaker has gotten to a point where it's almost like you want Okada to have like a super move because the Rainmaker has become like a V-trigger, if that makes sense. Where any of them can win the match for you, but most of them, for whatever reason, get kicked out of. And I don't think that's a good quality for a finisher to have. So if this is a return to... this is something super dangerous that I need to avoid because I might not be able to kick out of it. And then when one finally hits, I can't kick out of it. I'm fine with that. They do need to make the finisher more established and more dangerous. I don't know.
I'll agree with everything you just said, but not against Tanahashi in an IWGP championship match.
That's what I was just saying is I don't know that here is necessarily the place for it. Because unless you're telling the story that Tanahashi can't take the damage that he used to and now he has to change his style to be more like he can't just sit there and take punishment and heart his way out of it, you know, and that's what you're gonna do with him for this last little run of his. I think this is a match where it wouldn't have hurt to have him kick out of one. But yeah, I mean, other than that, it's hard to have a bad Tanahashi match. It's hard to have a bad Okada match. So if you were to compare this to other matches that they've had in the past, stuff like that, it's not like it stands out as like a great match of theirs versus the other ones. But I don't think anybody really expected it to either with Tanahashi at the place that he is in his career. And the stakes of it being, you know, it's a New Japan Strong Show. It's still for
the
title.
What do you give it? Like a 4, 4.25? I'd probably give it 4.
Yeah, right? Probably 4.
But here's the thing about the Tanahashi thing is, like, just in the relevance to the one Rainmaker that hit,
mm-hmm.
Tanahashi hit like 3 high five flows in that match.
Yeah.
That's his main move that nobody gets out of. Like, he took 3 of those, but I got hit with one Rainmaker and I'm out. Like, I get what you're saying, but it just, when you compare it to what Okada got hit with, I'm like, come on, man.
He hit one of them to Okada's back, too, which was fucking crazy.
Yeah, the one that he hit, and then he went up again, but he missed the second one with the knees.
Well, he didn't. Yeah, I think he got kneed, but yeah, it was...
But he did that one, and then he did the high fly flow to the outside. The very first one that he hit was from the fucking outside. He got on the top turnbuckle and jumped to the outside, and I'm like, holy shit, because we're... 8-Bit Hobo Farmer literally had just said to me, he said, hey, maybe at his age he should like change his moveset so he could last longer. And then as soon as he said that, this motherfucker climbed to the top rope and did the high fly flow to the outside. I was like, there you go. There you go. There you go. There's your answer if he's going to change his moveset. Fuck no. So he hit 2 or 3 high fly flows in that match and then obviously missed the one where the knees got up. But yeah, that doesn't really equal out to me. Like Tanahashi and Okada, same level. We've already established that, obviously. Ace and ace. But to hit your move 3 times and the other dude to hit it once and it's just a fucking clothesline, ripcord clothesline. I mean, like, come on. So I was actually kind of shocked that he lost off of that. I don't know if they could have been running low on time too. I didn't watch it live. I watched it right after. Like it was still actually going on when I started it, but I started watching from the beginning, obviously. So I don't know if they were up against it or anything. So I don't feel like they were with all the shit that they did afterwards with Okada and Mercedes. So who knows?
Yeah, the other thing, I don't know if you noticed this too, But when he puts Tanahashi in the money clip, it's like the announcers didn't realize, like, that used to be one of his finishers. Like, they didn't realize that that was an Okada finisher for a pretty long stretch of time. The inverted Anaconda Vice thing that he had him in. Like, the announcers didn't call it what it was. They didn't say that it was, they didn't act like it was like a big threat or anything.
I think it's more like the Million Dollar Dream than the Ted DiBiase move.
More like that than what?
Than the reverse Anaconda thing that
it's literally it's an inverted Anaconda Vice. Like, it's literally
it's the Million Dollar Dream.
Either way, whatever you want to call it, it's literally
But yeah, you're talking about the when Tanahashi was like crawling up to the outside of the ring while he was in it, right?
Yes. So the thing is, like, they didn't sell that as like I'm not talking about the cross-legged SDF thing. I'm talking about
I know.
Thing. Okay. So they didn't sell that like it was like he could have ended the match. They were just like, oh, he's got him in a hold. We'll see if he can escape. Like, they should have been selling that like it was like the Brutalizer from PAC. Like, it's the same thing. Like, it's that level. It's supposed to be how it is. Like, that is another one of his finishers. And it didn't seem like they either realized that or knew what it was. I don't know if that was like a just the announcer thing. I don't know what the deal was with that, but it didn't seem like they gave that the weight that they should have.
I don't want to remember this, but move of the night. Who was it that did the STF cross face chicken wing thing combo? Wasn't that Rosser?
He had Kenta in one,
there was somebody that combined a STF with fucking either Rings of Saturn or Chicken Wing or something. I thought that move was so fucking cool. I can't remember who it was though.
When Kenta quit, he was in an STF, but the ref was during the ref bomb. So
yeah, it could have been that then, because I want to say Rosser turned it into. It was the bottom part was the STF part, but then the top part he turned into like the chicken wing at the same time. It was so cool. I was like, yeah, that's a badass move. All right, so what do you think about the possibility of a mixed tag match in New Japan with what Okada and Mercedes were teasing?
It goes back to that. Is she a fucking heel or not, bro? The whole thing, they got to sort this out. They've got to figure out if she's being presented as a heel or not.
Obviously the thing that we would see is obviously Mercedes and Okada versus Tanahashi and Kairi, right?
Maybe. I don't know if you need to, because they both just beat them, so I don't know if you need to do that match.
Yeah, that's true. But what did you think about Okada's comments afterwards about getting the tag team back together, him and Tanahashi, to go after the tag titles?
Yeah, I don't know. Something to do.
That was fucking random, right? That was random as shit.
Right. I don't know. They could
Motor City Machine Guns versus those two would be kind of cool. I'm not gonna lie.
Yeah.
I don't know about why you would need to put the strong tag team titles on Tanahashi and Okada. I assume that they were talking about more like the New Japan tag titles, obviously. But Motor City Machine Guns versus those two would be cool as shit.
Well, the thing is, the current tag champions are Bishamon, which is Yoshihashi and Goto. And they're in chaos. So why the fuck would Okada be like, you know what? I should get my buddy Tanahashi. And we're going to go against our own stablemates for the tag titles.
Yeah, it's weird.
That doesn't make any sense to me.
Maybe they'll lose some weight and go after the junior heavyweight tag.
Yeah, you're going to go after United Empire. Yeah, probably not.
All right, so overall, what do you give Battle in the Valley as far as a grade?
Yeah, about a 5. Like,
No, just a grade, like letter grade, like we did last time, like we did for Royal Rumble, yeah.
Yeah, like a B+, A-. I think a lot of the matches were good, but I think it suffered from not, the only real story-driven matches were kind of in the 8-man tag with the Rocky Romero and Volador Jr. stuff.
Which I don't feel like they explored enough of.
They didn't at all, and then you've got the Eddie Kingston, Jay White stuff, which is pretty much over, right? But that was good story-driven stuff. And then the Mercedes stuff, not really that story-driven, except for I left WWE, I want to come over, and this belt means a lot to me. But there wasn't a lot.
She did the Cody Rhodes story faster than Cody Rhodes.
Yeah, and then the Okada Tanahashi, it's hard to have a bad match between them, but it's not like there was a lot of... I mean, there's a lot of history there, but there wasn't... It wasn't playing into why they were having a match this time, if that makes sense. So, Overall, it's probably like a B+, A-. Like, it was a really good show wrestling-wise, but there was so much stuff in there that I could have done without the Tom Lawler stuff. The Zack Sabre Jr. match wasn't bad, but it seemed to me like if they just didn't have that match at all, then maybe the Tom Lawler match would have felt more like a piss break before the Mercedes match. Like, there was just little stuff in there that I wasn't crazy about.
I'm actually giving it a lower grade than you. I'm giving it a B. Even though everything was pretty solid besides the Lawler match I didn't care for, and I still got, like I said, this is based off of what I saw. So I didn't watch the Zack Sabre Jr. match yet. So I'm going to give it a B. I thought Fred Rosser surprised me, did really good. Like you said, really no story attached to it. They tried to build one up real quick, but it didn't really work. And the other thing that a lot of people don't realize is Eddie Kingston and Jay White was supposed to happen months and months ago. That wasn't even supposed to be on this card. So they kind of had that fall into their lap at Battle in the Valley, because if that wasn't on this card, then... Ugh.
Hey guys, did you like that video? If so, don't forget to subscribe to the channel. You can also catch full episodes of the MonsterCast on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and Google Podcasts. And you can also catch us live every Sunday on Twitch. All links in the description below, along with some sweet merch from yours truly, the MonsterCast. Deuces.